Chariot Solutions TechCast, episode number 77. Adobe's Phil Mai on PhoneGap. The TechCast is brought to you by Chariot Solutions. Whether you're looking for mobile, native, or cross-device application, help with an enterprise Java, Scala, Ruby, or even big data project, or you need training in Java, Spring, Android, Maven, or Hadoop, we can help. Our consultants are adept at navigating complex application requirements on top of emerging technologies and not afraid to recommend the right approach for the job. Find us on the web at chariotsolutions.com. This week's interview features Phil Mai of Adobe's PhoneGap project. PhoneGap is a cross-device runtime platform for hosting HTML and JavaScript applications on tablets, phones, and other handheld devices. Chariot's consulting practice director, Don Coleman, joins us. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Okay, well, Phil Mai, thank you very much, and welcome to the Chariot TechCast.
Thanks for having me.
So, Phil, you work for Adobe, and you're working on the PhoneGap team. Why don't we talk just a little bit about your background, just kind of explain who you are, where you came from originally development-wise, and a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I'm based out of Vancouver, BC in Canada, and I was hired straight out of university here about 5 years ago into a small company called Nitobe, and we were doing mostly web development and consulting for local clients and clients all over the world. And we had a lot of web expertise. That was our main kind of thing. And around 2008, when the iPhone got announced, it was actually announced first with the main development approach being HTML5. So Steve Jobs came out and said, yeah, HTML5 is going to be the way to build iPhone apps. And so we were all stoked because we were kind of going down that route and we already had skills in that area. But then before the iPhone came out, a native SDK came out and it turned out that that was going to be the development route for that platform. And it was an exciting time too, because it was like the first real smartphone in at least in North America, aside from maybe BlackBerry. We were stoked with the HTML approach initially. Then when it got flopped over to native, we figured, well, we can't really get in here. But we were wondering if maybe we could reuse our skills for building mobile applications for the iPhone. And with those skills being the web, we wanted to create maybe a framework or something that would help us build mobile apps, but reusing our web skills. And that's how PhoneGap got started. It was initially a project that was born out of the San Diego, I think, iPhone Dev Camp in summer of 2008. A couple guys that worked for Nitobe at the time, Brock Witten and Rob Ellis, they went down to the camp and they came up with a rudimentary framework for building web apps, but they would end up being native apps, so they're housed in a native app shell. And it was very rudimentary, so initially I believe the only things that you could do were hook your web app up to the accelerometer and geolocation. And it was hacked together over, I think, 24 hours. But those were the humble beginnings of PhoneGap. That's where it started. And from there, more APIs were added. In September, when Google came out with the first Android phones and announced Android, we got the same sort of thing working on Android. And suddenly we realized, hey, maybe we don't need to learn Objective-C for iOS and Java for Android. We could just go down this route of working on this framework and build our apps with web technology.
So you're embedding a web browser in your app.
It's actually just as if you were to open an HTML or web page from your hard drive on
like
your laptop.
File URL.
File URL, exactly. That's exactly how it works. So initially how we were doing it is that all of your application assets were bundled together into the app. And the native code was just responsible for firing up this browser view, this web browser. In iOS terms, it's web view. On Android, it's the same. And kind of throwing these packaged assets, these packaged web assets that make up your app, into the web view and displaying them that way. A few other things were done too, like to trying to make it feel more native, we'd hide the URL bar, any like browser-specific Chrome or menu stuff. That was all hidden away. So you had a full screen at your disposal, but you wrote your UI and your logic too with web technologies. So HTML, CSS, JavaScript.
And so as you're doing that as a developer, you know, you're using your same development tools you're used to. From a desktop perspective, you just, what are you using? Like Safari, if you're doing for iPhone, what would you, like if you're doing Android, you test with Chrome and then you start trying to test in emulators. Like what's the development life cycle look like for a developer?
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to keep everything in terms of development using this framework as close to what web developers are used to. And because it's an open ecosystem, there's really no specific formula or recipe or no specific method that's dictated. So we wanted to keep it that way. How I do development, for example, and how most PhoneGap devs do development is they just work in their browser. So just as if you were working on a web app, you could fire up a local server and iterate quickly on your app that way. You know, just kind of doing edits and then refresh your browser, see what the changes are like, see if your bugs are fixed, and keep that feedback loop going. The same thing applies to PhoneGap. You can do, I would say, close to 90% of your development just using this classical web iteration loop. The final 10%, you know, you kind of need to get it onto a phone and see how it feels and make sure that all the little polish and the tiny details are just right. So you can do a majority of your development with the usual web methods, but because of the target devices and the way it's delivered, the mechanism of PhoneGap and how it works, it's useful to do the last bit of polish actually on the device.
Yeah, and that's especially important when you're integrating with things like the camera or other pieces of hardware. So really kind of getting in and testing on the actual device. You can do some of that if you wanted to do, like, let's say, location stuff. You can use Ripple, which is a Chrome plugin. The Tiny Hippos guys, who are now part of BlackBerry, developed that. It has really good PhoneGap support. So they basically have JavaScript APIs for everything that would be supported on PhoneGap. And then you can, once again, you're still doing your development within Chrome, but you're able to, you know, iterate quickly where you're not having to do that build and deploy to device step.
So what do you have, like little fake shims or, so to speak, JavaScript APIs that look just like the real PhoneGap runtime that then hooked to your plugin, and the plugin has some panel that says, here's what I'm going to show for the GPS location?
Well, yeah, Ripple basically, when you launch your app, it... The Chrome plugin actually sees that, and it puts like a little, like, makes it look like you're running on a device and has a bunch of sidebars for things like setting your location and doing other things like that. And they basically mock all those same APIs out that would be on my device when I did that.
Yeah, it's a great tool. And I mentioned before that iterating in your web browser was kind of the way to go, but more and more I'm recommending people to go the Ripple route just because of that ability to access those PhoneGap APIs that typically a normal browser does not have. So actually, we didn't touch on this earlier, but PhoneGap also bridges specific device APIs, which are classically not available in a browser, into your app. So you could access the accelerometer and contacts and get into the file system on your phone and that kind of stuff. And Ripple provides these convenient shims for emulating all of that. So like Don mentioned, you could set your location and then emulate the GPS activity that way. They also have this neat little three-dimensional model that you can kind of twist and turn around with your mouse, and then that will emulate accelerometer values. So you can fake a shake on the device, and then you'll get your accelerometer APIs firing the appropriate way inside the emulator.
So what kind of applications do you traditionally see people writing with PhoneGap as opposed to building natively? What do you see as like the most popular case?
Well, the web and HTML and CSS in particular, it's pretty flexible and good at solving specific problems. And those problems tend to actually be the majority of problems people have with applications they're trying to solve with on mobile platforms. You know, your list, kind of master detail list sort of applications are a great example that you could solve with mobile web apps as well as PhoneGap. or the web technology in general. Things that you probably wouldn't want to do with PhoneGap are graphically intensive types of apps. So 3D games, or virtual reality, augmented reality type of applications. Those are, you know, there's a lot of processing power necessary to pull those kind of applications off. And using an abstraction such as PhoneGap invariably imparts some kind of a performance hit. It's not great, but it does exist there. And for 3D games and those types of apps, you want to squeeze every little bit of power out of that little computer in your hand. So,
Right. And some of that may be changing, though. I've been reading more about these JavaScript-based 3D game engines and stuff, or not 3D, but JavaScript game engines that are coming out. So theoretically, you'd be able to embed some of those in there. But stuff like the augmented reality, you don't have enough control over the camera views to do overlays and stuff. And kind of speaking of things catching up, what do you think, Phil, about obviously on some of the newest hardware, like if you take the latest Android or the newest BlackBerry 10 or even the newest iPhone, the browsers on all those are starting to be pretty capable. Like you can take pictures with those, you can get your accelerometer, you can get your compass on all those, I think. In a way, on some of the newest hardware and the latest operating systems, the browsers are actually kind of catching up to what PhoneGap can do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's totally lines up with the objective of the PhoneGap project in general, and that's for it to not be necessary, for it to be gone. Like I mentioned at the start, the reason this framework even existed is so that web developers could use their web development skills to build awesome mobile experiences. And if we can do that in the native browsers on all of these different mobile platforms, then great. Then, you know, I don't have to maintain this giant framework and close bugs every day to keep it going and make it better. Instead, I'll leave that responsibility up to Apple, Google, BlackBerry, etc. We're the little guy, but we've got a lot of steam, and the manufacturers are starting to pay attention to what we're doing. If you look at it, too, a lot of the brand new mobile operating systems coming out now are following this exact pattern. So Firefox OS is a great example. It's built on web technologies, the entire operating system. And that's how you're going to build your applications too. Intel has one in the works called Tizen or Tizen. That's again completely standards based and web technology based. BlackBerry has one of their SDKs is called WebWorks, which is essentially this. And while PhoneGap sits on top of all these, because of the existence of these web based SDKs that the manufacturers are providing now, the PhoneGap implementations on these platforms are tiny. They're very small shims. Majority of them are JavaScript only. There's no native code that the PhoneGap project has to author anymore. So it's exciting to see that it's actually going that way and making our mission and goal come closer to reality.
Now, as a developer, as you get started doing this, let's say you have an app and you want to write it and target it for an iPhone and Android. So the practical question is, what do you need to get that started? Obviously, if you're going to build it yourself, does this thing then output a binary or like a project that you then compile?
Yeah, it's what you get back is a native project. So whatever the structure and the binary is on the platform that you're building for, that's what you'll get. The benefit is that you don't have to worry about the native code in it. You don't have to write that stuff. That stuff is all written for you. Your app is just authored in WebTech. The downside, of course, is because we're bound to these mobile SDKs and we have no choice about this, is we still have to follow whatever rules are in place for these platforms. So you still have to buy whatever it is, an iPhone developer account for $100. You still need signing keys for all of these platforms that need those. You still have to go through any App Store submission processes once you want to get those in the relevant app stores. So, unfortunately, we're still shackled to, the requirements of these walled gardens. But at least it takes the pain of authoring native code away.
Yeah, and in a sense, sometimes the especially getting the keys right, the provisioning, the getting your devices set up, that's just one of the necessary evils across all the platforms that you kind of still have to suffer through. I think that the ThoneGap team's doing a pretty good job of trying to make that easier with the good documentation on how to get started. They also working towards things like PhoneGap build, which helps, but it doesn't save you from going through and, you know, creating provisioning profiles and signing keys.
So let's talk about PhoneGap build a little bit. So that's a cloud-based build system. So if you don't want to have a Mac, you know, the BlackBerry SDK and everything on your machine.
Right, Visual Studio, Windows 8.
So how is SDK. That put together? Is that a free tool, or what's the licensing around it?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a cloud-based service. There's a free account. It's modeled very closely after GitHub. So you can sign up for a free account. You get as many open source apps as you want. So if you tie your app to a GitHub repo, PhoneGap build will pull down the web assets from that GitHub repo, package it up into whatever native platforms you want it targeted for, and then give you back binaries. There's also, you get one private application. So if you don't want that code to be open and available, or you want to hook it up to a private source control repository, then you have that one private app with each free account. And you can go up to, I think 25 private apps or so by, you know, paying a few dollars a month. There's a couple of tiers in there. I forget the exact pricing, but that's the general plan there. So the cool thing about PhoneGap build is that, especially with getting set up with PhoneGap, the problem is that you still have to go through the motions that each platform requires. So you need Xcode and a Mac and the iOS SDKs to build iPhone apps. You can't get around that. But you can, with PhoneGap build, at least get the binaries and submit them to iTunes without a Mac or Xcode or the iOS SDK.
When you're writing web-based applications, you're always concerned about the size of the JavaScript libraries and how much you import. Since it's running locally in the browser, is that less of a concern, or is it still the same concern, but now it's more of a limited device issue than it is a network bandwidth issue? Like, what are some of the issues around that for programmers?
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, it, you no longer have that network latency that you generally associate with large assets. So giant images, huge JavaScript files, massive CSS style sheets. If you have all that packaged within your app, then it'll load quicker. Of course, with JavaScript, there's still some kind of an interpretation time. So the larger the JavaScript, generally the longer it'll take to process the entire file. There's some kind of relationship there. So that doesn't exonerate you from, you know, writing good application code. You still have to write your app properly using best practices and stuff like that. But at least you don't have to worry about waiting, you know, those 10 seconds to load that 3 megabyte splash screen or whatnot. That's all kind of taken care of.
Now, Go ahead.
I was just going to say that with PhoneGap, you get both the pain and the luxury of essentially having a compile step. So before you create a final application binary for a mobile platform, you have to go through a compilation. And this gives you sort of an extra step to polish and prepare your app for, you know, living in an app store and living on a device instead of living on a server and having users request assets.
Yeah, I think that living in an app store is a kind of a good thing to talk about. I do some, when I'm talking to people about PhoneGap, I try to say that, yeah, you're building it with web technologies, but your app, for as far as the user is concerned, is basically a native app, because the user gets to go to the app store, they download it, they use it, they don't necessarily know or care that it's built with PhoneGap. You can build very polished apps and do really high quality stuff so that the user is very happy with what they're doing. And so that, since users are really trained to go to an app store to get an app rather than go to a website, that actually is one of the big advantages of PhoneGap there.
Yeah, sure. And if someone's getting started with this, I guess this doesn't necessarily cover the touch APIs, right? That's more like a SensaTouch or a jQuery mobile. Would that be the case? Like, what if you wanted to detect things like, you know, pinch and scroll and things like that from a PhoneGap application?
Yeah, so there's well-established methods in web development in general on how to do that. So you would employ the standard approaches of doing so on a mobile website, for example, for PhoneGap apps as well. You can use SensaTouch. You can use jQuery Mobile. There's no restriction on any frameworks or style sheet helpers or anything like that for your PhoneGap application. It's a clean slate. So there's we don't impart or force you to do anything in a specific way. It's a canvas for you to use.
Right. So people can choose to use those frameworks they really like, or people can just write, you know, basic raw HTML, CSS, and JavaScript and kind of do their own thing, or kind of mix in, you know, sometimes you may need to mix in something like Backbone to be handling models to drive what you're doing, or sometimes you'll want to bring in a UI framework like an Angular or a Foundation or something like that. So
totally. Yeah, actually, Backbone is a really good mesh with PhoneGap because it's specifically tailored for the single page application architecture, which is generally what we recommend in PhoneGap apps too.
Right. Yeah, the single page definitely helps you kind of architect your app and to help with, so you don't have to be keep loading different pages out and worrying about page flashes and things like that. Once that one page is loaded, the framework's all started, then you're just, you know, shuffling DOM elements in and out.
Exactly.
So as these devices evolve, you know, I'm looking at my Galaxy Note 2 here, and I've got the pen, you know, NFC is a new thing. There's all these different little doodads hanging off of it. What are you tracking in terms of the more recent types of device hardware that you're integrating with these days?
I mean, we're keeping tabs on everything.
I'm sure, yeah.
The main stuff that we follow, at least for the PhoneGap APIs in particular, is following what the standards are working on. So basically, we're involved in the W3C. SysApps Working Group is a newish type of community group that's trying to get a handle on all of these new device capabilities that are coming out and how best to enable developers to access them. So these APIs are being defined today. Not many of them are available in a typical web browser, but we see PhoneGap and the underlying Apache project that powers it called Cordova, we see both of these projects as kind of a prototype or a way to really give these new APIs a chance and see if they work properly or not. One example I'll give is the Contacts API that the W3C came up that no browser has adopted yet. And this API was spec'd out a couple years ago, and there's some serious problems with it. There's no sorting available with it. There's no way that really accounts for the different security models that are out there on these different mobile platforms. So because of how poorly it was authored, it was ignored by the main browser vendors. And so really, it's dead on arrival. The SysApps Working Group that is now a big part of the W3C is taking a much more pragmatic approach to this. And a lot of their APIs, it looks like they're going to get a lot more traction, at least on browsers such as Mozilla with the Chrome team. So maybe it'll be a little bit better that way.
I guess the other thing, too, is kind of looking at new stuff which is coming out. The plugins really allow you to support other things that are happening that people want to do. And a good example of that was a child browser plugin, which was there, and it would let you, as your app needed to, you know, pop open another website or do something, that had been a plugin for a long time. And then I think it was as of Cordova 2.3, they actually rolled that in and actually became part of the core framework. So I think we'll see over time, as some of these things are useful, people are using them, get the kinks worked out, they may roll them in.
Totally, yeah, and it's a good opportunity to talk about PhoneGap's plugin architecture too. All of the APIs that PhoneGap exposes are authored in a very specific way. There's a design around how plugins are built, and they generally involve some kind of a small set of JavaScript that will allow the end users to consume the API in some way. And on the platforms that do use native code, a little bit of native code to actually bridge the functionality. So all of the PhoneGap APIs are authored in this way. So the Contacts API that you have available right now is built on top of this plugin architecture. So are all of them. What we're going towards for 3.0 is the Apache project powering PhoneGap, Cordova. It will ship with no APIs. It will just be this bridge between the browser land and native land. And distributions of Cordova, the popular one being PhoneGap, will instead set up the project in such a way that it will provide these common APIs that people generally need. And we're aiming to have PhoneGap be something that's very user-friendly and inviting for new users to get in and start using it right away. But Cordova is offered in a modular enough way that extending your PhoneGap application with any bit of native functionality, whatever it is, is not too difficult. And as long as you're willing to roll up your sleeves, put together a bit of native code accessing these special APIs, whatever it is, then you can get that functionality out to all of your PhoneGap apps.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the API, too, is I like to say that, you know, the plugins aren't like a hack and you're just duct taping something in there. If you're building a plugin, you're using the same methods that the core functionality is written in. So it's very cool.
Great.
Phil, I think you've mentioned a few times Cordova, and we've been saying PhoneGap. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between Cordova and PhoneGap and why there's two different names, just for people that aren't familiar with some of the history?
Absolutely. So PhoneGap was the first project, the original project that came together. When the company I worked for in Adobe, we got acquired by Adobe in end of October in 2011. And what we wanted to do is, at that point, there was a lot of interest in PhoneGap, the framework. And we had a couple of different companies that were already helping out and collaborating, contributing on the project. It is completely open source. It was open source from the beginning. We realized that a project of this size with these kind of lofty goals, there's no way that we could close source it and keep up with maintaining it as it needs to be. So open sourcing it was a strategic move to get other people interested and contributing and honestly helping out. It was a lot of work. And open sourcing helped kind of alleviate the amount of work that we as a small company had to do. So when Adobe acquired us, we figured it was a good time to move it into sort of a neutral ground. So, to alleviate any concerns at the time of the acquisition of the product becoming closed or the license changing or anything like that with, you know, the reins of the company being handed over to a large corporation, Adobe and the founders of Natobi decided that it was best to put it into the Apache Software Foundation. So this is Apache Software Foundation is a neutral, nonprofit, supposed to be sort of like a third-party organization that owns the rights to the code. They own all the code. However, they mandated under their own license, the Apache license, that allows you to basically do anything you want with the code. So you can take it, you can change it, you can close source it, you can sell it, you can do whatever you want with it. But the main benefit of putting the meat of the project into this kind of neutral third party is that it's much easier to contribute to. So as soon as we did that, RIM was a lot more willing to put more full-time employees working on the framework. That point, Google jumped in, and now we have three, or actually four, full-time employees from Google working on Cordova. The entire Natobi team, after the acquisition, started working full-time on this engine, on the Apache Cordova framework. Before the acquisition, we were just a small shop, and we had consulting gigs to do and bills to pay. So we couldn't work all the time on the framework. We only did whenever we had free time to maintain it. Following the acquisition, we were all put to work on it full time. So since about November 2011, the rate of progress in the project has accelerated immensely. And throwing it into the ASF has, again, just increased collaborators and contributors and exposure of it. And the amount of code being changed and pushed to it daily is incredible.
Now, if people want to learn more about it, are you at PhoneGap.com still as well?
Correct. Yep. PhoneGap.com is the Adobe flavor of Cordova. And then there's also Cordova.io, Cordova.io. And that's the Apache flavor right there. There's not much of a difference between them right now. They're both open source projects. They're both liberally licensed. But once we have Cordova a little bit nailed down closer to 3.0 release in the summer, a lot more effort is going to go into PhoneGap and how to provide a seamless developer experience for our users.
All right, Phil. Well, thank you so much, Phil Mai from Adobe. thank you for taking the time talking to us about PhoneGap.
No problem. My pleasure.
Thanks to Phil for taking time to talk to us about PhoneGap and development of mobile applications. You can find out more about PhoneGap and the open source project backing it, Cordova, at their website, phonegap.com. We're offering a number of training classes at Chariot throughout the summer. Check out our website for the schedule, which will shortly include Android training in July. For more information and for a hefty discount, visit our training site at chariotsolutions.com/education and use the offer code TECHCAST, all one word. You can also browse hundreds and hundreds of podcasts, screencasts, and other information at our Emerging Tech site. That's emergingtech.chariotsolutions.com. Also, follow our blog at blog.chariotsolutions.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Ripple.